Okay, so I will start with a little bit of a note that we are excluding Houston here because they have their own health department and we don't have their data. So a little bit of background on pertussis. It's a highly contagious respiratory condition caused by Bordetella pertussis. Transmission occurs from person to person through respiratory droplets from coughs and sneezes. The primary symptoms include an inspiratory whoop, which is why it's often called whooping cough, and a persistent cough lasting at least 14 days. Vaccination is the best way to prevent pertussis. There are 5 doses recommended in the childhood schedule, 1 booster for adults, and maternal immunization is recommended during the 3rd trimester to protect those ineligible infants. So despite high levels of vaccine coverage in the U.S., rates of pertussis continue to rise. And because of that, our project aimed to understand some of the medical and socioeconomic factors that might be contributing to the rise in Harris County. So our cases were grouped by report year into 5-year periods, and we did this to account for some low case counts in certain years. Poisson regression was used to analyze our time trends, and the rest of our analyses follow the Public Health Disparities Geocoding Project methodology. The census data that we used was from 2000 and 2010 to calculate our rates, and the socioeconomic measure that we used was percent of people living below the poverty level in a given census tract. And we used the standard cut points from 0 to more than 20%. This first graph just shows our case counts from 2000 to 2014. You can see that there is an increase over the time period, but we also see the typical wave pattern that we usually see with pertussis. Next, we compared some of the demographics for our cases versus the rest of our Harris County population. For age, we saw what you might expect with risk of pertussis decreasing with age. And for race and ethnicity, our cases tended to be slightly more white, slightly less Hispanic and black than you might expect. Then we took a look at some of our vaccine up-to-date status for our cases. For those over 20, we had very little data on their vaccine coverage, but for the rest of the age groups, most of our cases were up-to-date on their vaccines. The only exception being our infant group, where the majority of cases were ineligible for vaccines. And you can see in the graph to the right that we looked at infants just specifically, and most of our cases were in that 0 to 2 month age range where they're ineligible for vaccines. We also looked at severity of our cases. For most of our cases, their only need for medical attention was at the primary care provider. The infants were more likely to be seen in the ER or at the hospital. And we also looked at the hospitalizations for all of our cases, and infants tended to stay longer in the hospital than other age groups as well. Finally, this graph shows the end result from our poverty level analysis. It shows the age-adjusted rate of pertussis by poverty level group from our wealthiest areas to our poorest areas. There was a significant increase in rates over the 3 time periods that we looked at, with a little bit stronger of a correlation in the earlier and the later time periods. And there was also a significant inverse relationship between the poverty level and the rate of pertussis. So we saw a higher rate of pertussis in our wealthier census tracts than we might have expected. So in conclusion, our pertussis reporting continues to significantly increase despite high vaccine uptake. We do need to continue promoting our cocooning strategies to protect those infants who are ineligible for vaccine because they continue to be the most at risk. There is an inverse relationship between poverty level and pertussis rate in at least those first and last age groups in Harris County, and we need to do some further investigation into why there may be higher incidence in our wealthier areas. And that's it. Thank you.
Quick question is a hypothesis regarding the sort of conscientious objector status and the relationship with socioeconomic status?
It may be. Another possible reason is access to care. We have a very large county and our poor areas are very disparate from our wealthy areas. We also know of some providers in our wealthier areas who may be a little test happy and tend to over-test even if people are not coughing for pertussis. So that might be another reason.
Great, thanks. Well, all really fantastic presentations. Thanks everyone for keeping it to the 5 minutes, but we do have 10 minutes or so for questions for any of the presenters. So I guess if you could maybe stand-up presenters, or just direct your questions to the specific presenter. Use the microphone, please.
Thank you. All were really excellent. I have a quick question for the presentation on illnesses and deaths and on cruises. The deaths, the causes of deaths were listed as cardiovascular and pulmonary. Any breakdown as to, was it, you know, MIs or asthma, or what were the contributing causes? And any recommendations, like, you know, cardiac clearance before going on a cruise, or, you know, asthma management or anything like that? So was it so the number one cause was combined cardiovascular and pulmonary, or was it cardiovascular and then pulmonary? Okay, thank you.
But were the deaths excess from what might be expected in that population group, or is, I mean, is there people going wild on the dance floor, or it's just
compared to the population
group?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I do know that with the on cruise ships, the population tends to be older, so it makes sense that cardiovascular and pulmonary conditions would be higher on cruise.
Hi, Emily Putzer from D.C. I had a question about the small area life expectancy. Hello, I'll just come right over. two questions, actually. What years of data were you using, mortality data, and then how did you get such small census tract level, keeping your standard error low? Like, what kind of tools did you use?
Okay, two good questions. So we used 10 years of aggregated life expectancy, or 10 years of mortality data to deal with our small number problems, and we actually, again, for as part of the communication purposes, we actually didn't want to put confidence intervals up on the map and cloud up the map. So you notice one way we addressed that is we rounded it to the nearest whole number. So we basically took some shortcuts in terms of our messaging to round that. And then we did some behind the scenes kind of insufficient data filtering. So we had a whole series of data with where there was large population change or large group quarters and some of those kinds of things. So, but mostly, this was a raising awareness kind of public health messaging piece. So we were less concerned about the specifics of the details. And you know, it's 20 years from one to the other, so I don't need statistics to compute that difference. So that was kind of our message, really highlighting the big differences. So, but there's a lot of small area data issues that the CDC and CSC work group I applaud and trying to address kind of on the ground, because you don't have, you have to take that next step of determining specific causes and moving forward with actions. So that's the next step.
Thank you.
Hi, I have a question about the legal epidemiology. What kinds of questions are you guys now answering? You know, what things have been brought to you?
Lots of things. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think so. So please use a microphone.
Oh, mic? Okay. Hello. This is the most awkward angle ever. So we actually find, at least I personally find, the evaluation work super interesting. The toolkit that I briefly brought up, we actually ask questions of attorneys in health departments, as well as you know, enforcement regulatory officials in health departments, as well as, of course, the healthcare-associated outbreak teams, the you know, infection preventionists and HAI coordinators and so on. And that sort of holistic data, it's the first time that we've been able to sort of ask those questions and get actual data points from a wider variety of respondents. And the types of questions we ask are really based on sort of the mapping studies that we have done and the results that we find off of that. So the types of questions can be, you know, how well is your law enforced, and the ways that we ask that and the ways that it sort of comes up among different kinds of officials seems to be, you know, impactful, interesting, showing impact.
So following up,
yeah.
So it seems like such a resource, and your answer is more like you're generating the questions and people aren't yet coming to you asking you, for example, could you map the history of disenfranchisement from felony convictions you know, over time and how that's related to infant mortality or something like that. So far you guys are generating the questions and collecting the data, but you haven't put yourselves out there for people to ask those questions. That's my question to you. Okay, I give you that question to answer.
So it's not a big department, but I would say that there are plenty of researchers in the field that also do this kind of work. There's folks out of Temple University that I know have a wider variety of sort of laws of social determinant of health, that sort of body of research. So it's, you like a partner, yeah.
Other questions for these incredibly interesting talks? Okay, we'll wind up the session. Thank you so much, presenters. Really great.